We're going to continue in this session our discussion regarding volunteers. And in this session, we're going to specifically look at developing goals, timelines. How are you going to actually have a plan to recruit volunteers? What are your goals? And so I want to begin by just thinking about a scenario. You're going into a church. The church has had a youth ministry. We'll say it's been moderately successful. But you notice as soon as you get there that there's very little support in terms of volunteer team working with the youth. So you know you need to develop that. Your passion is to have a lot of people because you want to impact their lives that they might impact the lives of others. The more people doing it, the greater the level of multiplication, the greater the level of impact, both depth and breadth. In other words, you can attract and draw in more students as well as take more students deeper the more people you have. Well, what's going to be your strategy? What I want you to do is talk with a partner just for a minute. In the first year, give me a number of how many volunteers you think you should try to pursue. We'll say right now it's you and you have three others. So there's four people. We'll say you're in a church of 300 to 500 people in the church. How many volunteers do you think you should have a year after you got there? All right? And what will you do to try to get that many? All right? Take 2 minutes. Let's go ahead and pull back together. You've come in. You've got this ministry you're excited about leading. God's called you to the church. There's you and three other people. 300 to 500 member church. How many volunteers do you want to try to have in a reasonable amount of time, a year? What'd you guys say? Okay, 5 to 10 volunteers. All right, so your team has increased from 3 to either 8 or 13, something like that. Okay? Any other spectrum? Anybody go totally different directions? How about you guys?
Well, I have to go for 30 volunteers.
Okay, 30 volunteers. Did you do that based on a percentage? Okay, so you thought about the kind of programs you would have and what would it take to facilitate those. Okay, good. All right, you guys?
Yeah, 50 volunteers.
Okay, 50 volunteers. Okay, good. So we're definitely growing. All right. 50 volunteers. Very good. How about you guys?
We said like 15. I like 50 additional, so you'd go from
Okay. I love it. I mean, I like every number here because I think you've thought through it. A lot of times people don't. They don't think specifically through how many do we have. Now, we're talking, as I mentioned earlier, about this ratio of 3 to 1. Recognizing that that has a lot to do with the covenant. I'm going to flesh that out more later. But the advantage of stepping back and saying, okay, how many do we really need? And being realistic. Okay, 50 volunteers in a year. Is that realistic? I don't know. I don't know in the given church. But I know what it's going to take to get there. And I'm the kind of person that certainly doesn't say, shy away from having big goals. Better to have big goals and not reach them, but get closer than you would if you made small goals and didn't really stretch yourself. Does it make sense? And so you have to balance that somewhere. Again, God's going to provide the people He wants to provide. But if you have a strategy that says, in order for our ministry to be healthy, I think we need to have a Sunday school. You know, you've already got one. I think we need to have small groups. I think we need to have outreach. I think we need to have a regular youth fellowship time. All of a sudden, you can begin to list how many volunteers do you need to run an effective Sunday school, an outreach, a youth fellowship, small groups. Now, we could certainly go to other things. We want to have special interest small groups. We'll put a circle there. We want to have dynamic mission experiences during the week. Circle there. All of a sudden, you begin to realize that there are so many doors, is what I call multiple doors, for people to come through, that you're going to need a lot of people to run those. So you have to be careful about how you present what you want to do and at what pace. Now, we're going to talk about that later in the semester. How do you take year one, year two, year three to build a ministry that has multiple impact? But the key is going to be people. One of the things that we fail sometimes is that we don't start with people, but we start with program. Programs of people don't always match up. In other words, you might have three people that says, I'd love to be a part of Sunday mornings. It's easy. I'm going to be at church anyway. I'll come in. But they're not really good teachers, but they maybe think they are. That's not fun to tell them that they're not, especially if they're an elder. That's happened. It happened in the first church I worked in. It's very difficult to go in and say, listen, you're not doing a very good job. And you certainly don't say it that way, but that's the gist of it. Now, what you really want, based on what you guys said earlier, is you want people investing in people's lives. Well, that may or may not happen during a Sunday school hour or an outreach or any other program. And so you need people who are going to say, I'm going to go above and beyond program in order to invest in a student's life. Nobody that you would list on your list of people who impacted your life would you say, oh, they came to Sunday school. That's why it changed my life. They did something else, whether it was just at Sunday school, investing in you, writing you a note, calling you on the phone, taking you to a baseball game. I don't know what it was. So you've got to think about, what is it going to require? This is where a lot of ministries, in my opinion, fail. And there's why. They develop a requirement for their volunteer leaders that's insane in terms of the amount of hours required per week. I did this, and I'm ashamed, and I wish I brought this to hand it to you to show you what a fool I was. But I created a job description for volunteers. And you couldn't, in my early days, be a leader in my youth ministry if you weren't free to give 10 to 15 hours per week. All right. That's a lot. Not really. Some, but only usually for a little season. But it made sense to me. This is the way I was taught. Well, if you're going to be a volunteer, you're going to be good. You've got to be at everything, and you've got to invest in everybody. Okay, I'm young, I'm stupid, let's go. I loved it, and I went for it. But this is why we came up with that. All right, I want to be a youth worker. When do you need me? I need you Sunday morning, I need you at youth group Wednesday night. Okay, Sunday morning, 1 hour. Wednesday night, 3 hours for the meeting, preparation, hangout time before and after. All right. Need you to do contact work. What's that? Hang out with the students who come and pursue new students who don't come. How many hours a week? Well, Friday night, you could do a Friday night, go to a football game. How many hours will that be? That'll be 4. All right, so we're talking 8 hours right now. It'd be great if during the week you could do like a one-on-one. Okay, how long? A couple hours. Now, everybody in here would agree that that 10 hours would be well spent, wouldn't it? I mean, we would love those kind of volunteers. But in the world we live in now, it is very difficult. And so many ministries will say, if you can't give that, we really can't use you. I would say, you're not going to have that big of an impact. Great if you can get 5 or 6 people to do this. And I think you can. I really do think there are people that have that kind of time. But you could get a host of other people who could give you 2 hours a week. Or 4 hours a week. And could you use them for 2 hours a week or 4 hours a week? I absolutely believe it's possible. And we're going to talk about how to do that. Any questions so far as we're running through this real quickly? All right. The numbers are tricky. I would suggest that you start again back with the vision statement. What are we trying to do? Our vision statement again, bring students into the body of Christ. Nurture them in their relationship with Christ. Equip them to serve in the name of Christ. All by the grace of God, all for the glory of God. Well, which of those things do we need to do first? And I'm not saying one's more important than the other. But I would look at a ministry if I was going into it and say, what are they already doing that I'm not going to change? Or that I'm not going to be able to change? Well, one's going to be, typically, Sunday morning. Most churches have some kind of program for their students. Most of them are not that good, but they have it anyway. It's called Sunday school traditionally, but something happens there. Well, how are you going to make it good? I'll promise you this. One of the common denominators is you're going to have a lot of people there to really help you develop a ministry that's going to have some kind of impact. And so you got to start thinking, how many will we need? And then let's go after it. See, people want focus. People want vision. They want clarity about what you want them to do. And that's what we're going to talk about next. You see, you've got to become a recruiter. If you like football or any college sport, there's that whole element of recruiting. In terms of the NFL draft, there's a little element of recruiting. The only difference is you're offering them lots of money. Of course, a lot of college programs probably are too. However, we won't talk about that. But in the pro programs, they send out scouts who are studying. In the college programs, people are going to watch high school football players play. And then they develop a list of people they're going after. People are into it. That's why, you know, Texas coach, for instance, Mac Brown, I'm a huge Oklahoma Sooner fan. We make fun of him. We call him Mr. February. He, for the last 4 or 5 years, has had the greatest recruiting classes. He still can't beat us. That's exciting. So he's Mr. February. Great coach in the recruiting season, not a very good coach in the fall. Hey, can I put that on tape? Sorry if you're from Texas. Go Longhorns. All right, moving on. The passionate thing about this is you're going to become a recruiter. You've got to think about who are you going to go after. Again, not just this one person that looks a certain way, but the whole church. How do you do that? Well, you gather a hit list. Now, it sounds kind of bad, but I mean in a positive way. You gather a list of people that others have told you they think would be dynamic in this ministry. Now, be careful here. If you're in a large church, you don't want to go after people who are already connected to other ministries yet. Just kidding. You don't want to go after them. You don't want to make other people in other ministries angry. You want to go after people who aren't doing anything yet, or if they're burned out. So you have a lot of conversation that takes place amongst the youth team, children's ministry team, senior pastor, all of them. Who do you guys think I should go after? And the senior pastor, he wants to have a good youth ministry. He's going to give you a list of people to pursue. Now, what I would do is not simply make a cold call on them. I would do what first? Pray. Pray hard for those individuals. I would then ask my senior pastor or other people in the church, what is the best way to pursue these people? I would get wisdom. So it's not just me calling, hey, this is Mark, the new youth guy. Hey, how you doing, Gene? Just want to talk to you. Would you mind me working with the youth with us? We kind of need some help. Think you'd be great at it. You don't think you'd be good? You'd be great. Yeah, I know you're busy. Everybody's busy. Come on, buddy. Do you care about God? Do you want to go to heaven? Okay. You don't want to do that. Gather a hit list. Ask other leaders who they would recommend. If you only have a few even. Who do you guys think would be good? Because that is a great thing to encourage another leader with. You know, Sharon came to me and said she thought you would be really good. My wife, for instance, right now, there's a lady in our church that she just thinks would be unbelievable. And she would. She's involved in two or three other ministries yet. So she's hands off. But my wife is so good. She's already said, you know, you would be great working with the youth. Well, she's planting a seed there. You know, as soon as that ministry goes sour or something, she can switch teams. That's kind of bad, isn't it? But anyway, she'll be coming, you know, eventually probably because my wife says, I think you'd be great. And that's something she will remember, and that's encouraging. Ask your pastoral staff to develop a list. Not just the senior pastor, but anybody on the staff. Who do you guys know that would be good? Share that information just as you should share it with them. You know, then develop a strategy to contact all the people on the list. This is where a lot of people fall short. They get the idea, they run with the idea, they get a list, but then they do nothing with it. Why? I think ultimately they're afraid of rejection. They're afraid of making people uncomfortable, afraid of feeling like they're going to make somebody feel guilty or whatever. Ultimately, though, I think it's rejection, that people are going to say no and none of us like it. You got to get beyond that. What you need to do is make your list. Who are the 10 people I'm going to pursue right now? And don't wait till the list is complete. You guys said you wanted 50 people. Don't wait until you get a list of 50 people to go after them. Start right away. But make your list. Maybe you have, within the first month, 10 people. Well, what you want to do is pray. Who and how, God, are you going to call these people? And you might say, I'm not calling them. That's okay. It's His deal. But you pray for them specifically. Then you develop a strategy for how you're going to ask them to be a part of the youth ministry team. Well, what would that look like? What would work for you? How many of you guys have been recruited by somebody before? What was it like for you?
She did all these things after the fact, but she approached me in a very deliberate, specific way with a specific request.
Did you appreciate that?
I did, and it was very easy for me to say yes.
Yes. See, that's important. I mean, we didn't just write that for her to read onto the tape, by the way. That is excellent. That's exactly what needs to happen. Somebody else? Anybody else recruited? I thought I saw another hand go up.
I've been recruiting both of them. You know, the specific time. You know, we have this list of needs in the whole entire church. Which one of these places do you want?
Oh, just one? You know, come on, we need more. One of the best experiences I ever had was when I moved to St. Louis to go to Covenant Seminary. I did not want to work in a church at that point. I just wanted to kind of study and volunteer in a church. I thought it'd be great to go in as a volunteer and just see what things look like from a volunteer's perspective. And so the church I attended, I met the youth pastor, who's now one of my best friends. And I said to him, you know, kind of interested in doing youth ministry, helping out. He's like, oh, great. And I didn't tell him I had any experience. I just wanted to come in as a volunteer, like a rookie, like, you know, I didn't know anything. And he said to me the following, he said, "Oh, it's great, man. It'd be great. Just show up. You know, Sunday nights we meet from, you know, 6 to 8:30 or whatever. And, you know, it'd be great whenever." Okay. And so I was pretty comfortable. I mean, I've been hanging around high school students for a long time. So I drove into the church. And suddenly, for the first time, I was like, I don't feel real comfortable. I see students all around here that I don't know. And I'm just going to sit here for a minute. So I waited. They all went inside. And then I opened the door to the big fellowship hall. I walked in. I didn't see the youth pastor anywhere. I didn't see any adults anywhere. I just saw a group of students sitting there. And they all looked at me. And suddenly I felt really out of touch, really awkward, and very afraid. "What are you doing here?" This one guy says. "Hey, my name's Mark. I'm looking for Adam." And I walked towards him. And they're like, "Well, are you like one of the new youth guys?" And I did not answer because I wasn't sure I was going to be yet. I was just kind of experimenting. And so I lied to him. I said, "No, I'm the building inspector." I thought, if I'm going to get to know these kids, I need to start off right with them. They're like, "What? Yeah, I heard you guys are pretty rough in this room, and lots of balls are flying, and structures are being broken. I'm just here to make sure that this thing's up to code, and that this isn't going to collapse on you." Well, they loved it. They believed it. Instantly, like, "Oh, yeah, we tore this place up. Let me show you where we put Mike Ford's head last week. Oh, yeah, there's a little divot right there in the drywall." So then the guy walks down, the youth pastor, and he sees me. He's like, "Hey, oh, Mark, great you're here. Guys, this is one of our new youth workers. We're so glad he's here." And all of a sudden, we're laughing and having a good time. But I learned a lot that night that that's not the way to recruit a volunteer. Because I was born to do it, in a sense. I understood it. I had walked through halls of high schools. I had been there before. But imagine a professional in the midst of their great career, hasn't been around high school students in years, walking through that door in the high school. "Who are you? What are you doing here?" You know, they're not thinking, this is the highlight of my life. They're not thinking, oh, I can't wait to come back here every week. They're scared. And they did a poor job of recruiting. You see, we've got to develop a strategy. How do we ask them? First part of that strategy is having a plan. What is it you specifically want them to do? Second thing is, it's about investing in the person. You've got to identify what their thoughts and their feelings are about youth ministry. First of all, do they understand the value of it? A lot of people, as we talked about in the earlier classes, really don't. Their impression of youth ministry is what? This is just a bunch of fun and games. Nothing really serious ever happens here. So you've got to get their perspective. You have to think, do they see themselves as chaperones, which is a word I can't stand, as babysitters, or as bakers? Simply, "Oh, you need cookies? I'll be happy to give you cookies anytime." You have to understand their fears that kids don't like me. They didn't like me when I was in high school, so they're certainly not going to like me now. I don't know enough. That's a common one. How can I help one of these high school students? I'm a young Christian myself. Really, how long have you been a Christian? Oh, like 30 years, but I'm still so young in what I know. And people just don't feel like they could answer those questions. And high school students will ask the questions, but they need to realize they don't have to know every answer. They might say, "I'm too old. I can't relate to them." And I just say, "Look at me." Now, nobody else in here is blessed with gray hair like I am. But you're never too old. You really are never too old. You got to communicate that. "I'm too busy." Well, that's probably true. And that's a harder one to deal with. But the reality is, why are you too busy? You can't really ask that question unless you have a genuine relationship. And the point I want to make is, I don't really pursue leaders unless I'm interested in pursuing a genuine relationship with them. Now, this doesn't mean I'm manipulating them, like I'm suddenly becoming their friend, and all of a sudden I began to put my arm around them and say, "You want to be a youth leader?" And they say no, and I say, "Okay, I'm done with you." That's not the catch and release program. This is about me going in, truly, genuinely investing in somebody. Because I'm convinced that in some way, every person in the church should and can contribute to the ministry of youth. It's the covenant. It's the way it's supposed to be. A couple of things I want to talk about then is, who do we go after? Don't just take any warm body. Who should we avoid using? I've got a list there, but you guys tell me, what kinds of people should we avoid? I mentioned that everybody in the church could be involved in youth ministry, but there certainly are people we should avoid. Who are they? Steve.
Freshmen in college didn't get enough youth.
Okay. That's a great way of saying it. Young people. We have a rule that I go by in our youth ministry that I won't allow any freshmen to actually be a part of our youth ministry. They're just too connected to it. Now, I would let a freshman work with the middle school, but they've got to go through training and be a part of it, because a lot of them really do just want to hang out. You know, I didn't go away to college. I'm still a commuter here. I want to hang out. We've got students that are still kind of dangling around our ministry right now, and they get the message. They don't always understand the message, but it's important for them to realize, you know, you can't really help. That's a good example. Who else should we avoid using?
I think someone who doesn't agree kind of with your vision can maybe stir up trouble.
And sometimes you don't know, David, until later on that that's going to be a case. And that can become a real tension. I've had that happen with leaders where everything's going fine and then suddenly they've got an idea for something and you're like, well, I don't think that's really part of our vision. And it can be kind of tense. That's where a relationship is critical and foundational to this whole process. It's very significant that we need to do that. But you could probably find out some things ahead of time, couldn't you? What kind of questions would you want to ask in order to clarify?
I think you could ask someone what, you know, what their idea of youth ministry, I mean, if they have any sort of a sense of vision. I mean, simply if you're wanting people that are feeling called, ask them, you know, kind of what is your calling, what is your sense of vision. And a lot of times you can just, you can tell from that whether someone's going to be, you know, fine with the vision of your ministry.
Here's a great question to ask. What was youth ministry like for you when you were in high school? We asked that question early on in the semester. And you can get a variety of responses. And I guarantee you how people felt about theirs is going to either be positive or negative about how they feel about youth ministry now. It could be, I hated mine. I want to make sure it's totally different. Or, I really love mine. And maybe they loved it for the wrong reasons. You know, it was just a social club or whatever. And so it's a good question to ask. What was it like? And they might say, we didn't really have one, or I didn't really go. And so you've got to really assess that. Other things are, you need to present your full vision for what it looks like. How do you feel about the vision statement? And listen to what they say, but also listen to how they say it. Are they condescending? Are they excited? What are the things you need to pick up on? And right then is the time to really sit down and analyze. Is this a person that really should be called? What are some other basic things that we would say we shouldn't have volunteers? Should we have a brand new Christian be a volunteer? Okay. Why?
Probably because, first of all, they're going to be struggling with those initial issues of faith. And as a leader, I don't know if you'd really be as effective. Just from the standpoint of a shaky foundation for doctrine. And, but I started volunteering as a new Christian, but under direct mentoring at the First Baptist.
It's a great question, and here's why. You make a couple comments that I think are interesting. First, a new Christian is probably going to be the person who has the most passion to be involved. Passion's a good thing. We like that. It's important. They're also going to be the ones that have new Christian baggage. But new Christian baggage isn't necessarily worse than old Christian baggage. Does this make sense? The point I want to make is you shouldn't have anybody be a volunteer who isn't going through some level of really strong training and real accountability. And a new Christian might have such a repentant heart and complete change that with just several weeks of kind of investing in them in discipleship, they are really ready to go. Whereas you've got a person who's been in the church all their life, but they have no passion for Christ, but they know all the right answers and their life looks on the outside to be holy. The point is, you can't tell without having a relationship with them, without asking the hard questions. Generally, which is what you said, I would always make sure a new Christian understood the basics of the gospel. But generally, I would also make sure the person who's been in the church a long time understood the basics of the gospel. So I would say it this way. Be careful with new Christians, but also be careful with those who are just really uncertain or lack hunger for God. You just don't want people who aren't really in love with Christ. Again, that's the first point of what it takes to be a volunteer. Love for Christ, burden for kids. Struggling spiritually, obviously, is in that category. If they're not in agreement with your core doctrine, I wouldn't let them be a volunteer. Now, that doesn't mean they have to believe everything that you believe. I don't think they have to. But they certainly do on the core things. And then you need to have a common understanding about the things that you would disagree on. What are the core things? Trinity, Word of God, salvation through faith in Christ, Christ alone. I mean, those kinds of things. What are some non-core issues that you could disagree on? And they could still be a volunteer. Okay, worship style. Somebody else? Yeah, yeah. Now, if you start to teach on them, you don't want to stand in front of the students and have a fight. You need to certainly make sure you understand what's going on, because that would be just so disruptive for any ministry. So just have those, but recognize you can have a good conversation and disagree about things. And it would be okay even for the students to witness that, as long as it was done in a healthy way. But you don't want anybody undermining what you're trying to teach. But you got to make sure what you're trying to teach certainly is not just, you know, your own thoughts, that you're making a biblical mandate, but it really would be a biblical mandate. So there are a lot of options, and you've got to be careful about what you expect. One of the examples that I would think through would be like movies is a good example. You might have a conviction that you should never see a rated R movie, or some would say you should never see any movies, whatever. Well, you may have a volunteer that loves movies and sees lots of rated R movies, and certainly they're safe. I mean, they definitely have some filter. They're not seeing everything that comes out, but, you know, they don't have some convictions. But you just made it a rule. I don't see rated R movies. I don't think students should see rated R movies. Therefore, I'm going to communicate that you shouldn't see rated R movies. Now, you can't make that a biblical mandate. Your leader, and you could get in an argument over that. It'd be very fair for you to say something like, hey, I'd encourage you not to talk about the movies you see, because we're not wanting that to be kind of a stumbling block for these students. And if they can't support that and respect that, I think it's important for them probably not to be a part of your team. But I think you can work it out. But you certainly don't want that to become an issue, where all of a sudden you being the leader of the group is the legalistic one, as the other guy's trying to teach what he understands grace to be. Does that make sense? Those things can be real significant tensions, and you want to make sure that they're in agreement with your core doctrine, what you believe. You don't want poor decision makers. Why? Because you don't want to end up on the Oprah Winfrey Show answering the question, well, why did you do that? Decision making is critical. What kind of things would be bad decisions? Well, this would be one. You're driving in the van, you got a volunteer driving, you know, you're not with them. He's brought the church van, he's got five or six people in the van, they're cruising along, they see hitchhikers on the road. Oh, it'd be kind of fun to pick them up, let's pick them up. Boom! Hitchhikers get in the van and off they go. Now, you go, I can't believe somebody did that. My Young Life leader did that with me. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I mean, it was awesome. My parents, though, they didn't think it was so fun. And he was not a young leader. This man was in his mid-40s when he did it, and so he wasn't like a, you know, cheesy guy. Another person did it that I know of and got fired from his job as a youth pastor. That kind of stuff's going to happen. You have to have good decision makers. Now, they're not going to be perfect decision makers, especially the younger they are. They're just not going to make perfect decisions. But you've got to make sure they understand basic common sense. And the thing that's challenging here is there sometimes is a real fine line about what is appropriate and what's inappropriate. And you want to really help them walk through that, but be strong. Make sure they have a clear understanding. And it can be little things, but you've got to really pay careful attention to what they're doing. Are they going to be able to be responsible enough to lead a small group of students on a mission trip and go to a different part of the work site when you're not right there? You've got to be able to know that, because ultimately you're responsible. Parents are going to come to you and ask you the hard questions. So make sure they make good decisions. A few others. You don't want those who are not wanted because their kids don't want them there. Parents often want to be volunteers. Why? Well, sometimes they want to know what's going on. It's a control issue. They just really want to see what's taking place in the youth group. The rule I have is that any parent in our church can volunteer as long as they fit the requirements that are present in our youth ministry. Do you have a dynamic, passionate love relationship with Jesus Christ? Do you have a burden for high school students? Not just your own, but high school students. Yeah. Well, because your parent is a third one, does your child want you to be here? Oh, yeah, they definitely do. Okay, I'm going to go ask them. And if they say the same thing you just said, I'd love to find a way for you to work in this thing. Sometimes the kids go, I don't care, it'd be great. Other times, they can't stand it. And it will be different with each student in the family. One of the ladies that worked in our youth ministry years past, their older daughter loved mom being around, no big deal. But as soon as the younger daughter hit her freshman year, she hated it. So mom went bye-bye. Mom went to a different position in our ministry team. That's just a rule I have. That's not for the parents. It's for the student. And it's an important thing because you have lots of parents that want to be there. Another thing is you don't want leaders who are reluctant to be involved. They just, you know, I don't really know. You got to help them understand the commitment levels here, but crystallize what commitment you're expecting. I'm going to talk about that more in a little bit. Don't have a leader who's unable to commit to your expectations, both spiritually and practically. What are your expectations for them? Based on what I'll show you in a few minutes, if we get to it today, is that you should have a clear job description, specific in hours, specific in expectations for every leader. And let them know that you expect them to reach that. It's important. They will rise to that if you do. But if they're saying, I don't know about that, really encourage them not to be involved. You don't want just a warm body. You don't want people who are overwhelmed with personal issues. Money, marriage, relationships. I mean, at seasons of our life, we're always going to be overwhelmed with something. But you want to really be careful, especially with the kinds of things they're struggling with. Because some things are just going to be so difficult for students to understand. And even though we certainly are preaching grace, grace doesn't mean that everybody's qualified necessarily to be a part of a ministry. So you could really gauge that and know your people well. A couple more. You do not want people who practice ungodly habits. What are those? Well, you've got to be very, very selective here. I'm not talking about legalism, but if there's ungodly habits that are present, doesn't mean they're not a believer, but it certainly could be confusing to a young person. You need to have a list of what those are that's consistent with that of your church. Alcohol, for instance, is one that could be a huge issue in a lot of churches. You might have a volunteer that really enjoys adult beverages. And your church, as a rule, like for staff, they look down on that. All right? You've got to be careful about the kind of message that's being set by those who are there. Because it's going to create some struggle. Some churches, it's not a problem at all. It just depends on where you're at geographically, the context of the church you're working in, and make sure everybody's on the same page. Because you don't want a message to go out that's inconsistent to the students, and it easily could. You don't want people who are not team players, and there's certainly lots of those, and you don't want someone, and we mentioned this earlier, who's intent on their own agenda, and they're everywhere. Agendas are flying. Any questions about the section, don't just take any warm body? I kind of covered it pretty quickly. Yes?
You addressed some specific issues of how to say no to certain volunteers who are wanting to help, but how, not so specifically, but how would you generally let someone know that you didn't think they were in a place where they could be effective in that ministry?
Yeah, great question. The question she's asking is, when somebody's not fulfilling the calling the way you think it needs to be fulfilled, in other words, if they're a teacher, they're not an effective teacher, or relationally, they're just not connecting with students, or morally, something's going on in their life that you know about that they need to step down. This is the hardest part about leading a ministry team, because all those things are going to happen. The temptation is for you to not lead. The temptation is for you just to hope it'll all go away. And if it all goes away, everything will be fine. I pray sometimes things will go away, that they'll just get better. But ultimately, God usually means, Mark, as the leader, you need to go and help this person work through this. See, my philosophy is that the first thing I must do is shepherd a team of leaders, that a team of leaders can shepherd others. So in a sense, my first youth group, if you want to use that word, is the leadership team. And so I spend time relationally investing in each of those people. Now, I even have people on our leadership team who are investing in other teams, or other people on the team, just because there's so many. And so what that means is, I've got to have the foundation of a relationship to be able to pursue that person. Now, I could go through several scenarios where things have happened where I've had to do that. And a couple of them, without using names, I had a leader who innocently began to spend the night over at his now wife's house. I really do believe that nothing great was taking place in terms of sin. The home life he was living in was awful. Dishes were flying through the air. Things were hitting walls. And he didn't want to go home. It wasn't a happy place. And he was in college. And so when his girlfriend got an apartment, he would stay there at night. Now, some might be saying, oh, you're so naive. They were definitely doing things that were evil. Well, that's for me and his relationship and our trust to work through. Doesn't matter. The inappropriateness of it, whether they were sexually involved or not, the fact that the mere appearance was so great, I had to deal with that. If I had no relationship with him, it wouldn't have hurt that much, and it wouldn't have been that hard. I simply would have said, you got to go. But because I'm shepherding him and discipling him, it's very difficult to come in and talk about it. Through that process, it got very messy. Not just sin in his life, but just the way other people were reacting. Because another leader had discovered what was taking place. And instead of being real godly about it, the way she handled it, the rumor kind of spread that so-and-so is sleeping with so-and-so, which probably wasn't really true. So suddenly I have to back up and go, all right, how am I going to deal with this situation? I don't only have a person who's done something which was stupid and inappropriate, but I now have another person gossiping, which is also stupid and inappropriate. And so I had to sit down and work this whole thing out. Why does it happen? Because we're in what kind of battle? A spiritual battle where the enemy seeks to destroy that which we're a part of. And so these things are really going to happen. Attacks are really going to come on your team. You must have a relationship with each volunteer you have where you've earned the right to be heard, where they know you love them, where they know you'll pursue them and hold them accountable. Then you must always go back to the core beliefs that you have as a leadership team. I give job descriptions, general sometimes, but people understand what kind of lifestyle I expect them to have. And if it has to be specific, I'll say things, I'll ask them questions like, is there anything that you're doing in your life that you think I need to know about? You know, and they usually will say, well, what about this? One leader might say, well, you know, I like to go to a sports bar and watch a game on Saturday. Is that appropriate? You know, depending on where you are, you'll say yes or you'll say no. There's some parts of the country I would say, absolutely not. I don't want anybody in our church or any student to even see you with an adult beverage in a bar. On the other hand, some parts of the country be like, oh, that's no big deal. I mean, feel free. It just depends on you, your church, and the scenario. But you must have the relationship to go sit there, sit down with them and say, hey, this is what needs to happen. All right. Great question. Did I answer it?
Yes.
Okay, good. Any other questions about things like this that we should be careful of? All right, one thing I want to cover then, and I'll try to remember to bring you a copy of this. The way things are happening in the world today, you need to be prepared to have your volunteers fill out a form so that you can do a background check on them and the different ministries that they're involved in. That means a police check. That means basically your church paying money to have a background check done on that person to make sure there's no history of sexual crimes or any other kinds of crimes that you need to be aware of. Now you might be thinking, oh, that's harsh. Well, it's reality. And your church will have to step up to the plate, pay that price, and begin to do that. Now you might be thinking, well, I don't know if we're going to go that way. Well, pity on you then if a perpetrator comes into your church and begins to invest in relationships when suddenly you get the call that so-and-so has been molested by one of the people you've used as a volunteer. Not to be sensationalistic, but why wouldn't they want to hang out in a church situation where people are trusting and where we've already mentioned desperate for volunteers? We do it in our church right now with all the people who work with the younger students. We are in the process right now of requiring it for our volunteers and the other upper level ministries, but not yet. But in the coming year, we will begin to put budget money towards that so everybody that volunteers will have a background check. People will be uncomfortable with that at times, but most of the time they won't. They'll simply say, that's a good thing you're doing because we need to know. And you do need to know. I remember the first time I heard this was about 8 years ago. And I thought, no way. That's just ridiculous. But it's not. There's just so much going on now. And you need to be willing to protect yourself in any way. So obviously, if something comes back on that chart, you would certainly want to say, you know, there's no way you can be a part of this team, as well as we need to talk to you about where you're at right now. And those are important. Those things are made public. And we need to know who's working with our students at all times. And the only way you can know that is by investing in them, asking questions, building relationships. Any questions regarding that? How that takes place? All right. Let's keep cruising then. We still have a lot to do in regards to volunteers. Build relationships with individuals. I've been saying that a lot. That doesn't mean just, you know, each Sunday you see them, say, hey, glad you're here. Welcome to worship. So glad you help. It means investing in them, just like you with the students that you're ministering to. It's so important to find out the things that they love to do and experience with those. One of my favorite volunteers was a gentleman I just admired so much. He was a vice president for Kerr McGee, which is one of the largest oil and gas companies in the world. And he was over their public relations department. And I had such admiration for him. And when I began to pursue him to be a volunteer, he's certainly many, many years older than me. He was in his late 50s. And I just was just interested in him as a man, learned a lot from him. When suddenly he began to say, I'd be happy to work with the middle school. Well, I began to find out the things that he loved to do. He loved to fly fish. He loved to travel. He loved to do lots of things. So I wanted to become interested in those things. You know, not just necessarily to go fly fishing with him or on a trip, but to read about things. So when I found out he was going to be going on a cruise somewhere, I would want to say, tell me, where are you going? And he'd say, well, we're going over to these islands. Well, I'd go to the library. I would look up information. I would read about that island, talk to him about it, just to show that I was interested, because I genuinely was. This wasn't false or fake. It was truly my interest. All that did was sharpen our friendship. We went to dinner with him and his wife, again, much older than us, to the nicest restaurant in Oklahoma City. They treated us. Beautiful thing. But we're just having fun talking about life, not about middle school students, just about life in general, our marriage, their marriage, etc. Invest in each other. Take them out for lunch or dinner. It's fun for a young youth minister to have a church credit card and to go to a guy who's in his late 50s and say, hey, let me buy you lunch. You know, it just feels wrong. And normally they won't even let you, which is cool. It helps your youth budget, which usually isn't very much. You could probably blow the whole budget in one dinner. But anyway, take them out. If they like baseball, get tickets to a ball game. You know, being in St. Louis, when the Rams weren't any good, which wasn't that long ago, I got tickets all the time. And I would constantly be giving them to leaders, and then they would usually give them to kids. And I think kids just made wallpaper out of them or something. I don't think anybody really went to the games. But now they're good, and so when I get tickets, I generally don't go. And if I go, I typically will take a leader with me, or I'll give them to a leader and say, hey, go enjoy the game. It's just important if they love it. And then ultimately, share your life with them. You guys mentioned transparency and teachability. Be transparent with them. Show them that you're not perfect. Show them that you have weaknesses. Show them that you're teachable. Show them that you can learn from them. And what would that look like? The next section we're going to get into is going to be in specific job descriptions. Before we jump into that today, there's a lot of them. I want to just kind of go ahead and wrap this section up. The reason is because the job description is such an important part of what people need in youth ministry. And I'm convinced one of the great reasons why we don't have very many volunteers. I'm not sure how many job descriptions I've put in your syllabus. I know there are pages of them, and they're little paragraphs. What I'd like you to do this week is think about, without looking at this list, think about what kinds of things people could do to help enhance your ministry. There will be many things that you're going to look at that would only require an hour or two per week, or maybe an hour or two per month, but that could greatly enhance your ministry team. Then the dream of having 50 people is not that far off. It really is amazing. Think for a minute about each of the ministry programs you have. And what would it be that would make them better? I'll give you one example. In two nights, on Wednesday, or tomorrow night, I'm sorry, we're going to have a huge outreach event that we do every fall. It's not, you know, ingenious. It's knee football. It's been done for years in many different ministries like Young Life. That's where I learned it. And it's basically guys versus girls. Football. Tackle. But the guys are on their knees. And for whatever reason, students in the community where I'm serving love this event. And flocks of them will come to it, even if they've never been to our youth group. At this meeting, there will be no prayer. There might be a little prayer for safety at the beginning, but there will be no talk. There won't be anything that's religious at all, other than the fact that it's taken place on church grounds and people who are youth pastors and volunteers are there. We're there for one reason, to touch the lives of the spectators, people who are driving by our church who would never come. Suddenly they're stepping on. The last thing we want them to experience is somebody handing them a tract or throwing a Bible at them or preaching at them. Instead we say, hey, we exist to care about you, to help answer questions about life you might have. Here's who we are. We'll hand out some kind of flyer that probably invites them to something else we're doing. But we rely on the students to invite them to the thing we do next week. Every Wednesday night, we do this thing called Crew, and the gospel's shared. If they come to the knee football, they see that we're normal, we're fun, they can laugh, they can have a good time. Chances are they'll come back, and they'll have a great time where they will then hear the gospel clearly presented every week. That's our vision. Now, in order to make that a great event, it requires a lot of people doing a lot of different things. Just think about it for a minute. What's going to make it great? Well, the initial thing typically we think about is the event itself. All right, we've got to have the field chalked. We need to have cones set up. We need to have some soda. We need to have referees. We need to have coaches. We need to have some level of safety. We need to have footballs. We need to have different colors. All those things you can think of. That's where the great majority of failure comes in using volunteers. Because ultimately, most of those things you could easily do yourself. You could run to Target and get the chalk, get the cones, get the footballs, do all that stuff in an hour trip. You could grab some snacks at Sam's, do all that stuff. But if you think beyond the event itself to the future and the kind of impact that event could have, then you begin to realize why a team is so important. What I mean is this. What would it look like if I was doing nothing that day except recruiting students and my key volunteers were doing nothing but really just setting up a few things like the sound system, but then just being there for students? If we had adults running different parts of the thing, like if we had a snack bar, none of my regular leaders are doing it, but a couple parents are. Not any of my volunteers are really over here chalking the fields. They're hanging out with students. Or if they are chalking the fields, they've got students helping them. What if you think about into the future where you want to market this event? What would it be like then to have somebody taking pictures of the whole thing from beginning to end? Lots of pictures. And I promise you, you can find people in your church who like to take pictures. And so you buy them 50 rolls of film. And you say, the only rule is, run out. And they're like, awesome. And they're taking pictures everywhere. And then they're developing it. And then those pictures are going to go in your youth room. Like an Abercrombie & Fitch store will be huge black and white pictures of these guys versus girls that will make your youth room look great. And the person who's taking the pictures and getting them developed is going to be so excited because they see them. Well, what about the person who could referee the game? Doesn't have to be a volunteer. It could be a person who doesn't even like high school students, they think. But suddenly they're out there in the midst of it. You see what's going to happen? All of a sudden, the church at large is going to see a lot more people investing in an event that's going to cause them to be much more excited about what's happening in youth ministry. So that when you stand up to talk about new football, or when you stand up to show a group of parents what the youth room looks like, these people are really excited about the small part that they played in their in the ministry, the life of this ministry. How much even more powerful is it going to be when one Sunday, after a trip to California, a young girl stands up and shares her testimony. And she says, the first thing I came to was new football or the ultimate frisbee tournament or whatever it was. And that person, one of maybe 100 people who volunteered, sits there and realizes, I had a part of that. Now, that's pretty exciting. You see, the chance of them one day being more invested in the ministry is going to be far greater because they're beginning to slowly catch a vision for it. The reason we don't have that many volunteers is because we don't take the time to organize something at that level. We're having new football tomorrow night. I'm not organized at that level. It's pretty well organized, but it's not at that level. I could do better. And I need to do that. I need to do better next year. What's it going to look like? Well, I got to think greater vision. Does that make sense? Our junior high just had a lock-in. 120 students came. 123 students. And those three students matter. It means you need 9 more volunteers because of those 3 students. You guys are getting it, aren't you? We could stand up and celebrate and say, it's a huge success. But we could also say, it's not near as successful as it could have been. Why? Because we may never see 100 of those students. Because we didn't have a massive numbers of volunteers in place to go aggressively pursue them. I think we did pretty good. I'm very excited about what our middle school team did. But I know in my years, many times, we could have these huge events with no exit strategy, with no sense of a plan of what we're going to do after the big event. That's why we need volunteers. The question was asked earlier, which I wanted to close with, when somebody said, well, how big is the youth group? When I asked you, how many volunteers are you going to pursue? That's the wrong question. And it's the wrong question because you're starting with limits. And you shouldn't. The question should never be, how big is the youth group? Is it going to be too big, this small? It doesn't matter. You simply need to think about the kind of impact you want to have on a given community. And Jesus told us that the harvest is always going to be plentiful. So don't think in terms of numbers of students. We've got 30 students, therefore we need this many leaders, or we've got 500 students, we need this many leaders. Think about how many leaders you're going to need to impact the community. And the answer is that you'll never have enough. But that doesn't mean you can't have an amazingly successful ministry. Because Jesus said, you'll always have enough. The point is, in our own strength and our own power, we'll never have enough. The need's too great. But in God's sovereign plan, He'll bring the people to your team. That will always be enough. That great ministry can happen. For you and I, that means we need to be praying to the Lord of the harvest. Bring leaders. Bring leaders. Not just in August, not just in January. Always. Constantly looking. Constantly asking. Because that's where the ministry is real exciting. Watching other people use their gifts for God's glory. Let's pray. Jesus, we end this session praying that you would just provide leaders for ministries all around the world, Lord. For God, it's when we really are surrendering ourselves to you that we experience the grace that you so freely give. Lord, open up the doors to hundreds of hearts where people could come and give of themselves in a way that would inspire us and inspire the students we minister to. Thank you for those who are already volunteering. I think about those in my own team. I just rejoice at the work that they do, the deep commitment that they have. And it truly does encourage my heart, Lord, to see the way you use them. May that be true in all of our ministries, Lord, that we would really pray boldly with great faith that you would touch many lives and draw them to yourself through the ministries that our volunteers have, that you've called. We thank you for this. Keep us safe till we meet again, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.